Moncrief on News Talk.
Hi, how are you?
So if we were to give our constitution a spring clean or an overhaul, in your mind, where would it be looking? What parts of the constitution would need updating?
So I think there are several places that we could start looking at. And actually, we do have a review from 1996 that basically contained, it's a whole slew of different reviews or different reforms that the state could implement. So from my perspective, I think there's a lot of updating that could be done in relation to some of the human rights provisions, for example. So for example, the protection of the inviolability of the dwelling, so that the state can't enter your house, for example, without a warrant. There's little wordings of that suggest that's for citizens' protection only rather than people. So you could amend that to make it clear that it applies to just people in generally rather than just citizens. I think particularly some of the rights provisions that we have are maybe out of alignment with what the European Convention on Human Rights states. So protection of freedom of expression, you could change the wording there. And also protection of freedom of association. But in particular, in my area of research, which is on things like emergency powers, we have quite extensive emergency powers in the Constitution. And say a lot of people don't realise that the state has been in a state of emergency for 56 years, from 1939 until 1995. So we could insert maybe time limits there. And I think an important thing we should make clear is that when emergency does exist, that the state can't just, at the minute, it states that any constitutional provision can effectively be suspended or overrided. So there are no, safeguards in place there. So we could make it clear, for example, that the state can't do things like introduce torture, for example, which is prohibited by the European Convention on Human Rights. So there's a lot of things in relation to rights that could be updated. Then there are kind of some more technical changes. So there's little things like discrepancies between the Irish language and the English text. So, for example, the age at which you're eligible to stand as president of Ireland. And I know we rejected a referendum lowering that to 18 a couple of years ago. But currently under the Irish wording, you actually have to be 35 years old. The English wording basically says that you have to reach your 35th year, which is 34. So there are a number of different technical things there. We could change the ratio of TDs to citizens, because as the population increases, the constitution states we have to have between 20 and 30,000 a TD for basically no between 20 and 30,000 people, one TD for each of that. So we could amend those ages if the population is increasing. So there are a number of different things. We could even change the preamble, the wording of it, if we would like to update it, because we think that, references to religion, for example, we maybe don't sit too well with us anymore. There's a lot of different things up for grabs. And just in general, a constitution really should be a living document. And, it's been in effect for almost 90 years now. And I do think there is a case for some spring cleaning, just to make sure that it does accurately reflect the people and the society that Ireland is today.
Yeah. And the Constitutional Review Group, that report in 1996, did that cover a lot of the ground that things that you've mentioned?
Yeah, it particularly in relation to those changes of the wording regarding rights. And it went into quite a substantial amount of detail into that. It effectively looked at the entire constitution, save for some articles in relation to Ireland's international relations. So in particular, the old Articles 2 and 3 of the Constitution, which dealt with Ireland's relation with essentially its claim to the island as a whole. And that was, you know, obviously quite sensitive at the time during the peace process. And we got reforms then to that wording arising out of the Good Friday Agreement. So really, they did look at the whole document, save for those areas that were carved out. And if we were to do some constitutional spring cleaning, we could do the same. We could set out maybe certain articles that we don't want to review at. So particularly those provisions that might have impact on our relations abroad, likewise in relation to Northern Ireland. Or, you know, we've had a lot of referendums approving various international treaties, EU treaties, etc. So those kind of things we maybe want to say, look, We don't need to review that. Maybe just we look at the other provisions that are more internal to Ireland.
Yeah. Now, I suppose, and one of the options that you've suggested is we have some sort of omnibus referendum. I guess a criticism of that would be that the people are confused enough about what they might be voting or not on Friday, that people might be extremely confused if there's a slew of changes in a referendum.
Yeah, I do think that is a fair enough criticism of it. In defense of it, I think, you know, we have a constitution that it's relatively easy to change, but it's still cumbersome and expensive, I suppose, to arrange a referendum. And I think a lot of provisions kind of exist by virtue of inertia of the state not wanting to go near it, saying it's not worth the hassle. So if we were to bring it together and try and do these kind of things all at once, then, you know, that potentially does make it worthwhile. Now, in terms of the confusion, certainly there would need to be, I think, additional processes in place to ensure the legitimacy of the referendum and to ensure the legitimacy of the amendment and to ensure that people don't feel that the government is trying to sneak certain things in through the back door by hiding them amongst other referendums. And I think the way to do that is by ensuring that there is much more democratic input and transparency in this process for drafting this omnibus amendment. So one of the things I suggest is, you know, we do use constituent assemblies already, and they might be good for suggesting certain reforms, but individual reforms, but the research suggests they're not good at looking at the thing as a whole. So what I suggest that would be a good model is to have a specially elected body that could be called a constitutional convention or constituent assembly that people could vote delegates to. And it's public and it's transparent and it's open. And that would give people perhaps more sense of ownership of these changes, rather than just it going through the usual process and people maybe not perhaps feeling ownership of these reforms. And that's arguably one of the critiques of the CARE referendum, is that, you know, it did go through the citizens' assembly, but the proposed wording is different to what the citizens' assembly was suggesting. So and now we're seeing quite a bit of backlash, particularly from disability campaigners, about that. So there is a suggestion that even when the proposal goes to the people, that there's maybe not necessarily sufficient listening to the people before it goes to them. So I think that's the best way to ensure that the people do feel ownership of these changes. Mm. And of course, there would have to be, you know, adequate time, adequate financing of the electoral commission that we do get information out to people. And I think on the whole, Ireland has demonstrated. So I live in the UK, and the UK has this, you know, rabid fear of referendums given the trauma of Brexit. But I think on the whole, Ireland, we're quite good at them for the most part.
Yeah.
And we exercise, you know, we exercise, the people exercise their power. I think for the most part quite well. And I do think we have to trust the people. And, you know, if we can vote on complex things like Lisbon Treaty or even the Good Friday Agreement, which is quite complex, you know, I think we do have to put some trust in the people to be able to do this kind of thing as well.
Yeah. Now, just going back to your idea about a constituent assembly as opposed to a citizens assembly. On a constituent assembly, would that be a nationwide vote of people to go on this assembly? And, you know, would we be looking for a degree of expertise as well?
So in theory, anyone would be eligible to stand for election. So that's the difference. The citizens assembly is not elected, whereas a constituent assembly, delegates would be directly elected. You know, one of the claims would be, well, why would you not just let the Dáil then do this kind of thing? And certainly you could let the Dáil do this kind of drafting of maybe these proposed amendments. However, when we elect the Dáil, we're not just voting on a single issue, we're voting essentially on a mandate for government. So if you to have a specific citizens assembly, their sole task would just be to vote on and to draft these amendments. And, you know, in theory, anyone could be eligible for it. And then it's up to the people when voting for who sits on this assembly. That's where, you know, arguments like expertise might come in, or particular interest groups might come in.
Yeah.
And obviously the assembly could call in, if it wanted to call in experts to give some guidance and review, then certainly that's an option for that it would be able to do. Yeah.
It always strikes me, though, when we have referendums on constitutional change, that kind of playing in the background, there's a debate about what our constitution is for. That, by which I mean, should it be very specific, or is it a more generalized statement of values?
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. And I hate to say potentially it should be a balance, but I do think there are areas in which you do want certain, you know, specificities. You know, when we're saying who has the power to do this, how long have they the power for, who is eligible for this office, you do want certain specificities there on those provisions. Other aspects of the constitution, rights provisions, for example, do tend to be quite broadly worded. And that's often, you know, And we're seeing some criticism of that in relation to the concept of durable relations, durable relationships in the family referendum. However, you know, breadth and flexibility is important. And what that does is that gives space as well to the democratic actors, to the Dáil and to the government to act as well. So it needs to be a bit of both. We don't want an overly technical constitution that runs to, you know, is a huge document. You're still going to need interpretation in that instance. But at the same time, if it's a too symbolic document, then there's no real constraint on the existing government or existing legislature at the time. So it potentially does have to be both. I think the key thing, though, about constitutions is, you know, sometimes we think of them as these documents that can't be changed. They're almost like carved in stone. And I think the Irish constitution shows that's not the case. They're documents that can be updated and changed over time. And the worst thing to happen would be to have a constitution that we can't change. I think a lot of the US problems in the US politics, for example, is by virtue of the fact its constitution is incredibly difficult to change. So really the only way to change it is by essentially nominating judges to the Supreme Court who will interpret it the way you would like them to interpret it. We thankfully don't have that problem because it's relatively easy to change. And I think, you know, we've exercised that power quite well. I think the 8th Amendment is a bit of an anomaly in that regard. But then, you know, we've subsequently come around and have changed that then more recently.
Dr. Alan Green is a reader in constitutional law and human rights at Birmingham Law School. That article is in today's journal. Dr. Alan Green, thank you very much.
Thanks so much. Bye now.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.